Dear Hazy B in about a half an hour. We're bringing back Dear Hazy B. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour as well. We've got the Raptors in action tonight. The Leafs have a double shot this weekend. We've got Mackenzie Hughes into the weekend down at the match play.
Some shocking stuff going on out there. John Rahm is one of the hottest golfer on the planet, and Billy Horschel took him down today. Rahm's going home.
Yeah. Well, Billy was in the final, I think, last year, right? Like Horschel.
And playing like garbage, though.
Right.
Not in good form, Billy Horschel.
Well, your boy Matt Kuchar shows up to this event, and he's Tiger Woods in 2000 every single
year. His brown socks and corduroys and hairy legs, and he wheels around there, and he's Jack Nicklaus.
He loves a match play.
He does.
He loves a match play, Matt.
You always bring up the hairy leg. Like,
I don't know. He just looks like he's got, like, you know, the guy that crosses his legs and you see his brown socks and his hairy legs.
Yeah,
that's what he looks like. He would look like in the locker room. He's got a little mini pot boiler, and he just wheels around, and everyone's yelling, "Cooch!" and he loves it.
Yeah, weird swing, like he's hunched over a lot.
I'll tell you what, though, that guy has stuffed a bunch of cash.
Lots of money. Yep, lots of money.
I bet you he's made $80 million on tour.
Possibly. Yeah, he was a redemption guy, right? He disappeared. He had to remake his swing and get back into it. Like, he won the FedEx, I believe, and he's been a Ryder Cup guy.
Highly touted amateur, and then early on he had, like, this swing problem, and some dude gave him this funky swing path, and he's like, I'll give it a go, and he's been dialed in ever since.
Yeah, flushing it ever since. Mail It In Friday is brought to you by Boston Pizza, Canada's favorite sports bar. The push to the playoffs is here, and BP's elite lineup of pizza, wings, and ice cold beer is always dialed in for game time. Hustle into your local BP tonight and try our new four cheese ravioli bites, a game-changing appy that's here for a limited time only. Steve Phillips here in a moment. Spring training is here for a limited time only, right? As spring training's almost over. It's almost the real stuff. Less than a week away. The Jays opening up in St. Louis, of all places.
They're weird.
On the road in St. Louis to start their season.
Wow.
But Alek Manoah will get the ball, so we'll catch up with Steve in a moment. The Raptors are in action tonight, the Leafs in Carolina tomorrow, then in Nashville on Sunday. That'd be a pretty good roadie. Roll through Carolina, find a way to get Nashville on Sunday night. Ooh. Watch a Leaf game down at, is it Bridgestone Arena?
Yeah, Bridgestone Arena.
And it's right off the strip, man. It could not be more, like, in the action than that rink in Nashville.
It's perfect. They actually, when you think about rinks throughout the league and location and what they have going around it, that might be one of the best ones in the league. I know Vegas, obviously.
We talk a lot of garbage about setting up shop. We got to set up shop at Tootsie's for a show when the Leafs are in town next year. Like,
Legends,
let's get serious.
Tootsie's, you name it. Like, we could do, there's just so many spots there. Like,
and I'm not talking 5 days of shows. One show, the Leaf game, and home.
I'd do it. You know me.
This would be the one, man. This is the trip because I think it's a 5 p.m. local. That means, you know, you're getting the honky-tonks at noon for lunch.
I know, but we're not doing overdrive on a Sunday.
Well, I understand that. So right now it's not going to be applicable. We're not getting down there for Sunday. I'm just saying. Yeah, it's a great – I mean, Noodles, you talk it up all the time. I've only been to Nashville once, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
You had one of the weirdest trips. Didn't you guys stay, like, 15 minutes off the strip or something?
No, that
you
was
saved
Austin.
Extra
that
Texas.
Was in Austin.
Oh,
man.
That's
that was
right.
My idiot buddy was dating –
that's a fireable offense.
He absolutely should be excommunicated from the whole group. I don't know how he hasn't been – he was dating, like, a travel agent who she had it in her back pocket. Like, if you set a – I got a place for you that was way more expensive.
Dude, it's like going to Toronto and staying in Newmarket.
Literally. It was 40 minutes outside of the strip.
Garbage. Yeah.
We were halfway to Arkansas. Like, we were barely in Texas.
I can't imagine the abuse that guy took.
Oh, it was disgusting. Disgusting. And we were at, like, a resort, basically, for, like, like couples and stuff. Like, it had nothing to do with what we should have pulled the pin, grown up pair, pulled the pin and said, forget it. We'll stay at a motel, you know, downtown if we have to.
For
idiocy.
Sure.
Like, getting in cabs, honestly, and us, of course, it's like 3:30 in the morning. Like, yeah, we're going to this place. Like, literally, cabs are like, I'm not driving there. Are you nuts?
Insane.
That's like the site of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. not taking you out there. You're crazy. So the Jays kickstart in St. Louis, and Alek Manoah gets the ball opening day. This time last year, it was a formality, Jose Berríos. This time next year, will it still be a formality? It's Manoah. Let's get into that and more. Here's our TSN MLB analyst, our good guy, our good man, Steve Phillips. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys. And always good to come in after a reference for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, it's always a great intro leading in with that. But, you know what? I think you can take it to the bank. Manoah will be the opening day starter next year, too.
You're willing to – you're locking it in right now. Because last year it was Berríos for the next 7 years,
yeah.
Right? Everyone knew Berríos was the man.
Yeah. I'm locking in, and I bet no dog's money on it that it's going to stay that way, too.
Okay.
Well, Steve, let me ask you. There was talk about Gausman and his performance that possibly he would be the opening day starter or might be in consideration. And there's been a lot of talk this year about athletes and them getting bent out of shape from coaches' comments. Is it like a massaging type thing where you got to tell people, like, are people's feelings hurt or do they see the writing on the wall that this is deserved and Manoah's the guy?
Yeah, I think there's a chance people's feelings can be hurt. I mean, you know, for instance, you got Verlander and Scherzer in New York, and they didn't really like each other all that much when they played in Detroit. Now they're teammates again, and I think I saw Scherzer's got the start for the Mets on opening day, and you know, Verlander I think is probably okay with that, and you know, they're going to manage innings for everybody through the year. But I think it's an issue. I think that there are, you know, when there are two worthy guys there, and you know, it's interesting that in Los Angeles, Julio Urias is getting the opening day start. Kershaw is like, absolutely, he's earned it. I mean, but Kershaw started 9 times. Like, it's okay with him. But, you know, I think there's internal competition. There's nothing wrong with that. And you know, I do think you have to massage it a little bit and go that way. And you can't just ignore that feeling. And here's the thing. It may be like, oh, seriously, I gotta go take care of this guy. Well, if you want him to perform for you, then the answer is yes. You're going to have to sort of play with him and nurture his emotions a little bit, because your job is to get the most out of the players, and you can't just say, well, forget it, grow up, you know, just deal with it, because that's not how you get the most out of your guys. You gotta be aware of emotions.
Steve, who do you think for the Jays is the candidate for a big breakout year?
You know, I really think the Varsho pickup is huge. I he's a guy that is on the verge of figuring everything out. And, you know, he's a power guy with like 27 home runs. He can steal bases. He's got a real shot at being a 30-30 player, just coming into his own. He fits in perfectly with age and mentality. I mean, he looks like one of those guys that's on the van with the travel team, with Bichette and Guerrero, those guys. Like, they just look like they show up. They don't care who they're playing. They just want to play. He's that kind of guy. He's really excited about playing, and I think getting locked in one position for him, where, you know, he's kind of caught a little bit, he's played some center field, I think just getting locked in one spot will be good for him. I think the change of scenery is going to be good for him, and I think he's on the verge of really becoming a breakout player.
Steve, with Manoah and Gausman, I think they're quality guys, their work ethic and their performance is pretty much locked down. Berríos, like, where is your confidence level that he is going to respond this year? And do you think that he has an understanding that he's under the gun and he needs to be obviously, clearly, way better?
Yeah, I mean, he is one of the nicest young men you're ever going to meet, and he may even overcare. Like, he cares so much. You know, sometimes those guys who are a little bit aloof, where they don't take in the failure, tend to be a little better in baseball. You know, I was somebody who cared as a player so much, and I played with Kevin Mitchell. He'd go over 3, and he wouldn't care. He'd make an error, he wouldn't care. I'm like, oh, man, I'm letting the team down. What are the guys in the bullpen thinking about me? And you can't be that way. Berríos is kind of hypersensitive, and, you know, but you like that guy. He's the kind of kid you want your daughter to marry. I mean, he really is a real gentleman. But I do think that he was better this spring. I think they have a plan for him, and so, you know, we won't know until the real lights turn on. You know, spring training performance can really fool you. It can be fool's gold, or, you know, you can think, oh, geez, this guy's done, and he comes bouncing back, and you don't know until you know, and that's really when the lights turn on, and the pressure's different, and you're breathing differently, and, you know, the energy's different, and you know, it counts, you know, and the numbers matter, so... I think that he's better, and I think he will be better. He's made of the right stuff. He's a hardworking kid. He cares so much. And I think the key for him is he's got, you know, when he works ahead of the count, he's got to learn to expand the strike zone. You know, my thing is, he tries to throw every pitch over the plate. And when you have it, when you're ahead in the count, you've got to start it on the plate and break it off the plate. And that's where I think he sometimes gets himself in trouble. But, you know, Pete Walker's a really good pitching coach. The kid is really hardworking and cares a ton. He knows. He's feeling the pressure. He wants to do well. But he had pretty good outings. His last time out was pretty good. So we'll see if it can propel him forward.
With Steve Phillips, so down in Dunedin, they put forth a lineup that looks like it could be in place come opening day next week. And to no one's surprise, you got Springer hitting leadoff, then into Bichette, then into Guerrero. Then it gets a little bit intriguing, where Brandon Belt was DH'ing today, left-handed hitter, then into Kirk, then into Varsho, left-handed hitter, Chapman, Merrifield, Kiermaier hitting ninth. Once you get past the top three, which I think we all accept will be in place and should be in place, Springer into Bichette into Vladdy, how important do you think it is for this team to have a balance of lefties and righties coming up to the plate?
I think it's really important. And the reason I do is from talking to managers that managed against the Blue Jays, they said they were an easier team to manage against in the late innings. And, you know, against the starter, you know, it's one thing. But when teams could come out there with dominating right-handers, with wipeout sliders, with an all-right-handed lineup, they could just get into a rhythm, and it was easy to manage against the Jays. And talking to managers this year, they're like, yeah, it's going to be a much different look with the left-right match and combinations that they have for us to navigate the game with the relievers we want, where, you know, the slider just wiped them out the last time, but now we're going to be throwing a slider down and into a left-hander, and they're going to take us out of the ballpark. So we've got to really sort of manage our way through their game. It's a big difference. And again, Belt's a real professional hitter. Varsho's got some, you know, really great tools that can impact the game with power and speed. And Kiermaier, you know, look, Kiermaier, he was saying the right thing in spring training. You know, he's a talker. But his thing was, I just got to get on base. I don't have to worry about power. I just need to get on base. And I just need to get on base so the top of that order, Springer, can drive me in. And that's really the key. They need the nine-hole hitter to be a second leadoff man so that Springer can drive in some runs.
You just mentioned Springer. He's so important, Steve. Leadership, intangibles, the clutch gene, all of the stuff that he's done throughout his career. In the last couple of years, he's been often injured. How would you handle that if you were mapping out a plan for him? Is it something where he's just so important, you sit in a meeting room with the skip and everybody, and you just say, throw him out there, and if it happens, it happens? Or would you try to devise some type of plan to kind of make sure he's more available in the lineup on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, you know, his injuries are because he plays with reckless abandon.
Sure.
You know, he's diving and sliding and crashing into walls. You know, and so you think, okay, well, let's move him to right field. Well, there's no walls in right field. And so, you know, he's going to have to, and he is not one that you're going to pull back. I asked him about it. Do you ever think about it? He goes, I can't play that way. I'm just going to play the way I play and go out there. You know, they'll try to manage the playing time a little bit, but they need him in the lineup. And he just needs somewhat, you need good luck. You need good fortune. You need to not have that pop-up flare where he collides with Bichette and has to come out of the game, where he's crashing into the wall all the time. And so in Kiermaier, the good news is Kiermaier covers the gaps extremely well. And Kiermaier, as the center fielder, has the priority. So when he calls it, Springer has to peel off. He can't just dive for it. When you're the center fielder, you go for everything. And so I think he can be protected just a little bit just because of the change in position.
With Steve Phillips, so this past week we obviously saw the end of the World Baseball Classic, and it culminates with Ohtani versus Trout. Now, everyone's got a take on Ohtani versus Trout, and furthermore, the standing of Shohei Ohtani, not only in the modern game, but in terms of history and where he may stand. Your clip with Mad Dog has been going viral. We've been talking about it here, Steve. It sounds as if you're a proponent of Shohei being the greatest player in baseball history. Is that true? And if so, explain where you stand on this.
So here's the thing. He's doing things that nobody else has ever done, including Babe Ruth. And so people put that on Babe Ruth. Now, Ohtani doesn't have the longevity of Ruth. But the reality is, Babe Ruth, there's quotes out there. Babe Ruth said, you can't be a pitcher and a player and do both. It's just your body can't handle it. Now, Ohtani has the advantage of being a DH, where, you know, Babe Ruth didn't have that available to him. But, you know, Babe Ruth played, when he played, there were eight teams. He played seven other teams in his in the American League when he was playing. Seven. He didn't travel west of St. Louis when he played. And he didn't play against some of the best Negro League players that were playing then. And so he wasn't playing against all the best players in the world at the time. Where, you know, you look at Ohtani and what he's doing coming over here in the States and what he did in Japan and in Major League Baseball. And, you know, he is doing that against the best. And he's doing it. He's doing what Ruth didn't do. Ruth, the most starts Ruth made in the season was 20. Ruth pitched in one game when he went to the Yankees. He didn't pitch. He wasn't a two-way player for the Yankees. He only did it in the 2 years, really, with the Red Sox. And so what Ohtani's doing, nobody else has come close to doing. And, oh, by the way, Babe Ruth didn't throw 102 miles per hour on a 1-2 fastball down and away to Mike Trout. He's such a unique player, and nobody's ever been able to do what he's doing right now. Now, does that make him the best player ever? You know, he's doing something nobody else has ever done, and he's doing it at an elite level, and Babe Ruth didn't do what he did. Now, Babe Ruth went on to have a long career. He hit a lot of home runs. You know, Chris Russo points out that he hit more home runs than were hit in the league 1 year, and I'm like, okay, well, that's great, but it was like 19 or 20 home runs. It wasn't like a record-setting number. So Babe Ruth was great, and yet, you know, when we try to compare players across generations, it's always a difficult, across eras, it's a real difficult thing to do. But what I do know is nobody's done what Ohtani's doing, ever, not even Babe Ruth.
Well, yeah, we've been discussing it a lot as well, and my thing is trying to define what Ohtani is, because everyone uses the same terms, right? He's a unicorn. Right. He's unique. He's doing things we've never seen before. All of that is indisputable. But he's not the greatest hitter of all time. No one thinks that. And he's not the greatest pitcher of all time. No one thinks that. So
right.
It's like impossible to have the conversation, because he's a one of one. Right? Like, Ruth is one thing, but he's not as good as Willie Mays. He's not as good as Barry Bonds or Hank Aaron. And then on the pitching side, you could come up with 20 guys who are a better pitcher than Ohtani. Easily.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to define
him. Right. Yeah, so he is a Cy Young candidate every year as a pitcher. He is a Cy Young candidate. Some people will tell, you know, the odds are not bad for him as a Cy Young Award winner this year for the American League. He also has a chance to be, as a hitter, be a top home run hitter in the league, and he's that unique combination of power and speed that is, you know, so rare as it is and so impactful in the game. You know, somebody did a story when they tried to figure out, well, who is he? And they came up with, he's Zach Wheeler, Carlos Rodon as a pitcher, and he's Bryce Harper as a hitter. Okay, now Bryce Harper is going to be a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. So that was the comparison. So they were trying to figure out what he was going to get paid, but those were the comparisons they gave him as to what he is as a player. And when you think about that combination, that is more valuable and more impactful for any single team than any single player has ever been. Now, we could say Babe Ruth hit 714 home runs, but he wouldn't have if he played against the best players of the day. Mm-hmm. If he played against the Latino players and the black players that were playing in the Negro Leagues, he would never hit 714 home runs. And Ted Williams probably wouldn't have hit 406. And Joe DiMaggio probably wouldn't have had a 56-game hitting streak. Because they didn't play. All those records and all those performances were done when they weren't playing against Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson and all the black players and they were playing in the Negro Leagues back in the day. Now, it doesn't take it away. They were the best players of their era when they played and everything else. But when you look at Ohtani, nobody has impacted the game in the way that he has. Nobody.
No. Like, again, I'm not disputing that, but
forget
the old guy. Like, you could just use modern play. Like, at the plate, no one's taken Ohtani over A-Rod. No one's taking Ohtani over Pujols. I'm not.
Right.
Like, he's a great hitter, but he's not better than Bonds, in his prime.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree. Right. But it would be like Tom Brady. It would be not Tom Brady. It would be like, who would we say? A great quarterback. It would be, Steve Young.
Is it Eli Manning or something? Or Steve Young?
Yeah.
Roethlisberger.
Yeah, or Eli Manning, you know, who won championships. And also play linebacker, right? He's quarterback and linebacker, and he's a
wild
Pro Bowl linebacker.
It's crazy,
right?
Yeah, it is crazy. He is the most valuable. I think he's got to be the highest paid. I guess I have a difficult time. It's almost like he's played himself out of the debate. Is my point, Steve?
Yeah.
Because I can't compare. Like, Willie Mays didn't throw the ball Like, he didn't step on the mound and have a 250 ERA. Like, it's absurd.
Right.
It's absurd.
Right. Yeah, he's the only one, right? And now, remember, the whole Jordan-LeBron debate, you know, it turned into they were both players, but LeBron did things that Jordan never did, right? Because he could go inside, play outside, and everything else. But people always kept saying Jordan. And everybody else that would say LeBron said, yeah, but LeBron does things Jordan couldn't do. And in that debate and argument, where do you go from there? Because Jordan didn't play the game the same way as LeBron did. Now, this is a little different because it is baseball, and the way we defend and pitch versus hitting is different than the basketball argument. But when players do things that other guys didn't do, it becomes really difficult. How do you compare the greatest hitter of the day versus the greatest pitcher of the day? And who's more valuable? Was it Willie Mays or was it Nolan Ryan over the years? And because they played different positions, we don't know. The reality is that we can compare Ohtani to both those guys and at least have a conversation.
Yeah, it is something else, man. I can't wait to see what he brings. I can't wait to see him hit free agency if he does, because that is going to be a whirlwind. We'll leave it there, Steve. We appreciate it, buddy, and we're getting close to go time, so we'll be chatting with you a lot down the stretch here, and we look forward to that too.
I always enjoy it, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst and our good buddy. Good buddy, Steve Phillips.
How did that go?
That was quite the intro. Our good pal.
A good man. I butchered that intro. I meant to say good buddy. That's what I was trying to say. Here's our good buddy, Steve Phillips.
How did it go?
Do we have the tape, JP? Roll the tape. We don't have it yet.
We don't have it yet.
Asked to clip that 15 minutes ago, but I'm sure we'll get it. I'm sure we'll get it at some point. Well, Dear Hazy B coming up. If you don't have the clip, what do you do? Dear Hazy B.
Wow.
It's all good. We'll find it at some point.
When we were talking about the alter egos, somebody, I think Arad, got in my ear and said, Mac Jameson. And I said, clip it. So, I mean, do we have the Mac Jameson?
Maybe the Mac Jameson is, maybe we because, had our
oh,
wires
you fell
crossed.
For my alter ego. That was basically Lamar Jackson. I was.
Yes.
I'll never forget that. You guys
Mac
were
Jameson.
Like. Yeah,
is
Vegas.
Brian? Great to be on the show. Very excited. How are you doing today?
How could you not tell that was Noodles? Now that
because
you
I wasn't.
To it.
All I knew, I love a pre-tape or whatever. Or you guys pre-taped a Mac Jameson or something.
Yeah.
And you were saying, like, we, you know, Vegas just came in the league. And you were like, we got a former Vegas great. And I was like, Vegas great in hockey? And I was like, I don't even care because it's a pre-tape. And then it was going on. I'm like, that guy sounds like a moron. Then I figured it out that it was you two.
I was out in the park. Remember, didn't I do it like 10 minutes before the show from the parking lot or something?
Yeah,
like,
I was in the backup booth, and you were, I think you were in the studio even. You were like right around the corner.
Yeah, I feel like I went in that little dark room and was like trying to put my hand over my phone.
Muffling your phone. It was the Ken Francis. The original Ken Francis was Mac Jameson.
Exactly.
Mac Jameson calling, trying to get a contract for Lamar Jackson. Hi, how are you, Bill? Is it Bill Belichick? The name's I'm Ken Francis, and I'm calling on behalf of Lamar Jackson.
I would, like, how much would you, I don't know, not even pay, but how excited would you be if a story came out, it's like that was Lamar Jackson's, I don't know if he has a sibling or whatever. It's his brother.
There's
like,
nothing
literally.
Illegal about it.
No,
I,
but
as far as I know.
It's a great story.
It'd be hilarious if it truly was Lamar, his alias was Ken Francis. Or if it was, you know, a family member and he's sitting right beside him. Say this.
Yeah.
Ask him how much he'd be willing to pay me.
But you've never heard somebody say, like, in the past, my dealings with Ken Francis, he's all, like,
no.
Nobody's ever heard of the guy.
He's not a certified agent. The NFL had to send a memo out saying, if a Ken Francis calls you, do not engage.
But this is why I think there's smoke, there's fire. Like, there's something up to this. And you know right now there's a reporter that is trying to dig through, like, they are going to get to the bottom of who this guy is. There will be pictures. There will be something. And if there's nothing, they're going to figure it out that it's Lamar or a family member or something.
I hope so. And I think you're right. I think you're right. All right. You want to hear my intro here to Steve Phillips? Because I couldn't find good buddy. Let's get into that and more. Here's our TSN MLB analyst, our good guy, our good man, Steve Phillips. How you doing, Steve?
our good man.
We got a guy. MLB analyst, our good guy, our good man, Steve.
Oh, that is gross.
That's the worst is when you can't leave the good guy alone, and then you go searching in your head for something else, and you blurt one out, and then you're like, do I go for the triple? Do I try to find another one?
You're right.
And then you just settle back in.
That was two strikes, and I said, forget it. I'm not swinging anymore.
Just run with it.
Good man. Our good guy, our good man. He mixed that into something the Butabi brothers would probably dance to. Good man, good buddy. All right, we got our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. And Dear Hazy B is making its triumphant return. Dear Hazy B, next.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something. There isn't.
She said looks aren't that important to her?
Dear Hazy B.
By God, I got a couple of words for you. You better get your act together.
All right. You guys are well rested for this segment where we help out people.
Yep.
All right. And we have a doozy off the top.
Ooh.
Dear Hazy B. A few weekends back, some buddies and I took in some festivities in the nation's capital. 67's game in the Bedard Bowl. Friday evening, following a nice dinner, we ventured to a nice establishment. Let's call it the Chaperie. For some suds. My girlfriend, who isn't a fan of these establishments, caught wind that we put in a four-hour shift at the Shea, followed by a nightcap at the blackjack tables. To be clear, no funny business went down at the Shea. Just drinks with the fellas. To her, it didn't matter. I got home and she had the boxing gloves on. Was I out of line? Or was she overreacting?
Ooh, that's tough.
This feels like where we need like a Dear Mrs. Hazy B to contribute. Because I can't speak for her. But what I can say is you were not out of line. You were absolutely not out of line. You are an adult. You were on the road having a good time. Now, I don't know how she caught wind of it.
What if she forbids the establishment?
But well, then that's on you, man. That's on you. Like, what do you mean forbids? I understand it. If it's a big issue, then you have to come to that conclusion yourself on whether or not that's something you want to deal with. But I think you might have a mole in your group. That's what I want to know.
That is a massive problem, because there's always one rat that would like to say, we weren't at the pub, we were actually, and it's just like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
That's where my question is. Was he not going to tell her he was at the Peelers? Is there not some transparency?
Sounds that
way, Noodles. What did you do last night? Oh, we went for some drinks. Oh, where
Noodles,
did you go?
I think it's Hazy B brought up the best point here. It's like, who is the mole? Because he just jammed everyone up.
But I think you got a fox in the hen house, and that's where your concern needs to. You're out now. So listen, just own it. It happened. Yes, you went. But how would your significant other know you put in a four-hour marathon shift without someone sneaking that info out? You got to watch yourself.
That's
Keep your head
point,
on
the Brian.
But it depends on the group that you go with. There's people that tell their significant others everything. So it's like, all right, like if you got to know that guy's going to out everybody, you know what I mean? Or if, like you said, if it's a rat or a guy that just tells his wife or his girlfriend or whatever, everything, then you have to expect that. Like, that's the only thing I would think.
That's the case. That's your problem. That's where Dear Hazy B can step in. I can't speak to what's, you know, your relationship and all that, and I understand why it's a delicate topic. I get it. But if you have someone that you think is a foxhole guy but is not a foxhole guy, you better snuff that out delete from the group chat and no longer a part of the festivities in the future. That's professional advice.
Alrighty, this is a tough transition, but we're going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Hazy B, My daughter's turning 3 this weekend. Wife wants to buy her a new bicycle that's $200. Ooh. I'm saying secondhand for $50 max. How do I convince her?
Ooh, that is one worthy of convincing. It's bikes at that age are like
Dude, hockey skates at that age.
We
live in Canada. They're going to ride it 4 times, and they're going to grow out of it. So why?
Exactly. Until your child reaches an age, in my opinion, where you know they are going to get consistent play, or if you have multiple kids, like if this is the oldest kid and you know you got 2 or 3 or 4 more kids that are going to use it, fine. That might be a different story. But if it's a 3-year-old, I have a 3-year-old in my house. I have multiple bikes that we, not that I needed to tell you guys, but we have, honestly, all the bikes we have gotten are from other people we know, basically.
No kidding. You want this bike?
So yeah, sure, we'll have that,
that would be my advice to this couple. Ask around to your friends that have just gone through it, because until they're at an age where they care about what their friends think of their bike, at 3 they don't. They want the little frilly things on the handlebars. Just find one of your friends that has one. Not important.
Make sure there's a bell on it, ideally, because that's a big, big play. And you're right, O. Like you just said, a 3-year-old just sees bike, doesn't see details, doesn't see beauty, doesn't see a price tag, just sees bike.
I agree.
Bike.
And most importantly, the 3-year-old does not care what her friends think about her bike.
Exactly.
Once again, a tough transition. Dear Hazy B, I have a female coworker sending all kinds of signals of an out-of-office meetup being desired.
Hmm.
Ooh. Okay. The last time I went down that road, it ended up being a 5-year relationship disaster. Do I take the bait or learn from previous mistakes? Noodles, I think that you would have an expert type analysis on this scenario.
Considering I married a coworker, is that what
you're
saying?
Oh, no. This is up your alley as like Noodles knowledge.
Well, I mean, I say take the bait. As long as you get, again, I don't understand the dynamics. You have to have like an HR person involved at some point once you turn a corner. I think that's what the rules. I remember Steph and I having to like have a conversation with like the bosses. You had to put it on record type of thing, HR, because if things go south and you're working together and you're fighting, it's awkward for everybody. I think Brian, like, it was almost like Steph and I had to have a conversation with you, because Steph was the producer, right? And
you were running.
It was you and I. Like, it was kind of, it was a weird, but I think it was a kind of, it's like, hey, we're dating.
It wasn't like.
Well, you don't think Hayes knew when you guys were holding hands coming into work?
We weren't holding hands.
But like the idea that I don't have any radar is I have gone through this on multiple fronts. My younger sister married one of my best friends. And they were dating. They didn't think, somehow they thought I didn't know. It's like, you two idiots. Like, of course I know. Like, for starters, my mom's told me immediately. Secondly, we're out together. Like, and you both disappear at the same time. You like, think up, I'm a moron? Like, I think I know what's going on here. Yeah. Okay, here's what I would say about this. Inner office stuff, it is more complicated. Make sure you really are, you know, like this woman, or vice versa, right? Like, the idea of just being like, nah, we'll see. Then it gets, I think you got to be a little bit more committed, right? Like, it's not just going to be, I'm going to take a flyer, I swiped right. It's not a Tinder date. Like, you've got more of an in-depth relationship already. So I think if you're having second guesses, or you're like, I don't know, I'm not feeling it, I would say stay away. Don't go down that path.
I think you have one play at it. You meet for a coffee, and you see if there's anything there where in the future one of you possibly has to switch locations.
That's the concern. Exactly.
Because if it's not worth, you just have a, you sniff it out for a coffee, right? And that's it.
A coffee sniff.
That is literally it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the meetup outside. The meetup.
Because if it's, there's no sense of screwing up work stuff if it's just not worth it.
That's my point. Exactly. You can't do it. Cannot do it.
I think meeting up outside of work, they already know something's up. You know what I mean? They've probably been like chatting at work, and it's
chatty,
like,
chatty, like, chatty. You
work, know what I mean? Work friends and colleagues, they're aware. Exactly. People are not idiots. They pick up on this kind of stuff.
Hazy, I think you'll have something on this one from when you were Griff.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Hazy B, I was recently at a restaurant enjoying a nice meal with my partner, and right in our sight of line was a grit grinder with some serious ass plumber crack. When his date went to the washroom, we debated on telling him to pull his pants up. Should we have told him, Hazy B?
I love how, like, I'm the one that would have a PhD in this.
Dude, I just figured when you were Griff, you had some plumber ass at one point.
There's probably a very good chance at different establishments around Toronto that there were other couples saying, should we tell this guy? That looks like the guy from TSN.
I love it.
I don't think you say a word.
Dude,
I don't
you
think
have,
you say
no,
a
you
word.
Have to. You
no,
just
you
have
don't.
To go up. You do, and
no,
you say,
don't.
You put your arm on him, and you say, man to man, I see your ass crack, and I don't think you want me to see that.
Yeah, but the date, his date or whatever, is not sitting behind him.
Dude, like his date has gone to the bathroom. You're not doing it in front of her. When she leaves, you say, sir, I can see half of your ass.
Yeah,
and
but
so can the restaurant.
But the restaurant, he doesn't care about the restaurant. He cares about the woman sitting in front of him. That's what he cares about. Now, if the path to the washroom is coming right back through at Plumber's Alley, then that's a different story. Like, if you're like,
let me ask you this, Hayes. If let's say I didn't know you and I tapped you on the shoulder, and while your ass was your Griff ass was hanging out of your chair, I took a pic. I tapped you on the shoulder while your date was in the bathroom, and I showed you the pic, and I said, "What do you think of that? Maybe you might want to fix it. I just wanted to help you out." Would you sucker me in the face, or would you say that's a good guy?
I would question your motives. I would not believe for a second.
Dude, it's like saying your fly's down.
It's totally different. And here's why my radar would be going off that you're being disingenuous. I would suggest you don't care about how I'm looking with the
date.
But
this
guy
generally cared. Kyle cared. He cared that this guy's ass was sticking out. He wanted to help him out.
Kyle cared that he was about to dive into a chicken parm, and he couldn't believe that guy's ass was sticking out. And he didn't want to continue with his meal because this guy couldn't get it together.
You're not taking the right thing from Kyle. Let's go.
Kyle's not a good Samaritan. Kyle is a selfish, selfish individual that only cares about Kyle's restaurant.
This guy Talon is a good Samaritan. Hazy B, you can kick this off. My girlfriend won a free trip to Portugal through her work in April.
Hmm.
She has an employee-only event on the second day. By the way, Talon, you're lucky that she's bringing you.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And there's a sick golf track right across from the hotel. I've been frothing at the mouth to tee it since last season. I'm guilty of getting after it on the course, and she knows it. We have an employee appreciation gala later that night. Do I risk a quick 18 during her event, or do I play it safe?
No, you get that peg in the ground, and you absolutely Rory McIlroy a tee shot on one.
But this guy's claiming that he likes to get
What this guy's all about. But I'm assuming if you're in Portugal, your buddies aren't there to activate that type of activity.
You might be joining a group.
Exactly, which means you're not going to floor it to an extent where you are Bernie Lomax at the work event later that night. That's the difference. Guys going to golf courses where they're with their friends, that's when it can get carried away. If you're in Portugal, there's probably a language barrier. You could tip it, and I think you'll be fine. And I would be honest about it, though. Like, that's, getting back to honesty and all that kind of stuff. You're at a work event. It's a serious trip. You're putting forth an image. I would probably make sure that everything's on the up and up. But if you get the green
light, I'd be straight up honest. I'd say, look, we're in Portugal. I'm going to enjoy myself, and I'm going to have 9 light beers on the golf course, but it's not going to do any damage, so don't worry about it.
Sure.
Well,
yeah,
if he can control himself, though, that's the problem. Like, what if this guy just starts teeing it, and
he's
I got to have
Frank the Tank.
36 beers, and whoever I'm teeing it with, I'm going to be drinking, and I'm going to try and impress them because I'm a new country, and it's guys that, like, Like, it could be a situation where he's just in one and he's going to have to live with it. And then his girlfriend, he shows up later at the event and he's goon. And she's like, oh, my God, this guy's
in Portugal. Gooned in Portugal at a work event.
That's
wow.
a movie.
That yeah, really is. And you're, I mean, she's stuck with you until you land. Then
exactly.
anything's possible, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's one okay. that you can both kind of weigh into. Dear Hazy B, I accidentally left the elf on the shelf in a spot that kids could see during recent basement renovations. They are now asking why the elf is still there. How do I rebound from the swamps of stupidity that I find myself in?
Ooh.
Wow. Yeah, this one is this tough. One is very tough.
And dude, there's a lot of dads out there that have gotten gooned on the couch watching a Leaf game and they forgot about the elf on the shelf and they
Believe
are
me.
In trouble. Oh, you're one of them.
Well, no, I'm not. No, I'm saying like you. I mean, Hayes, you can speak to it recently. I don't know if it was around when your kids were younger. Oh, but it's like you get anxiety. You'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go, did I move that elf? Like one time, like Steph come bombing in. Like I was sleeping with my son. He couldn't sleep.
Dude,
so
I forgot the tooth fairy one.
Get out here. You know, like it's anxiety for 30 days. I actually hate those ridiculous
it's
things.
It's really tough.
Hate them.
It really is. Honestly, you got to come up with some sort of here's what you do. Write a note courtesy of the ELF, right?
Ah.
Right? And then with some sort of reasoning behind. Hey,
and
was
a
just,
gift. And a little nugget.
Maybe a little
like
gift.
Was chocolate or
you
something.
You know, little Chippy was testing you last night, and yeah. you passed the test. And you know then here we and then the next time Chippy's you know in the basement or wow, what this shouldn't be a concern. It's March, like why is this a problem?
But I agree, it's like Chippy was just sniffing around to see if you guys are behaving.
Yes.
And I fell out of the roof and I landed on my ass.
Chippy.
And I'm now in your basement. Chippy's yeah. okay though.
Very simple.
I
Chippy,
agree.
Write a note.
Here's a chocolate
from
for
Chippy.
You.
Yes,
I agree because I think it's. Our two elves for the kids are Finger and Vanilla. And you can just be like, Santa sent
Pardon
them
me?
To check up. The two kids are the two. We have two elves, like one for our
wow.
son,
That's
one for the
even
daughter.
More
One's name's Finger.
Finger and Vanilla. They, oh, the kids named them. I didn't name them. But, I mean, point being, I hope that I think the kids
tough.
Are watching in the living room right now. Steph's going to come in and scissor kick
You're going to get drop
but,
kicked right in but, the face.
I like the thing is if they find them, you can say Santa sent them back,
right?
To keep an eye on you, you know, and like
no
something
problem.
Like that. Like,
no problem. A little note goes yeah. a long way. Goes
exactly.
a long way. All right, there you go, dear Hazy B. We're trying to solve Christmas problems in March. I mean, that's how
exactly.
dedicated we are. You know, whatever comes across our shores, man. We
got
to
do our thing, man.
Yeah. We're here to help people. And yeah. I feel like we did that. I really do enjoy doing that because I feel like we really help people. Probably hurt some people too, but what really is the focus is the helping. Yeah. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Raptors Pistons tonight, the Leafs in Carolina, Leafs in Nashville on Sunday. Busy weekend coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Mail It In Friday is brought to you by Boston Pizza, Canada's favorite sports bar. The push to the playoffs is here, and BP's elite lineup of pizza, wings, and ice-cold beer is always dialed in for game time. Hustle into your local BP tonight and try our new four-cheese ravioli bites, a game-changing appy that's here for a limited time only. All right, Raptors Pistons tonight. You got the one seeds playing, the Sweet 16. And before you know it, we'll be into the Elite Eight, and then it's go time next weekend, Final Four, and we'll see what comes of the tournament, but it's a mandatory win for the Raptors, right? I've been saying that all afternoon, but I stick by that. And injuries are still adding up. Barnes not going, Trent not going. But you're coming off a loss where you didn't play well. It was really a horrible effort, and they need to be a lot better tonight. And I expect they will be, and especially against Detroit. It's got to show up.
The only way they can bring some excitement for me, Hazy, is if they just get dialed in and they catch fire somehow coming down the stretch. And the storyline becomes these guys could upset and cause some problems. That would be the only way it would become interesting, to be quite honest with you.
Yep. And it's hard to believe that's going to happen after 73 games of inconsistent play. But
it's not.
Probably not. But they're still, you know, get in, play some meaningful games, make something of this. Because, you know, the whole tanking thing is – it's too far gone. Our best bets are brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I got a two-pack here in the Colorado game tonight. They're at home against Arizona. Colorado big tonight by 2+. You got to pay juice, minus 166, but I think they roll. Geno Malgin to record a point is paying plus money tonight. I like Geno Malgin to get on the game sheet. He's still playing on that top line. Mm-hmm. He's playing like 16 minutes a game in Colorado. So Dennis Malgin to record a point tonight, paying plus 102. I like the Avs big. There's your two-pack. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. So this is the kind of weekend you're looking for. Again, with the Sweet 16, you got the match play going on, the Miami Open going on, a lot of Canadian content down there. And then a two-pack for the Leafs. The Raptors have multiple games. And Melanin Friday is brought to you by Boston Pizza, Canada's favorite sports bar. The push to the playoffs is here, and BP's elite lineup of pizza, wings, and ice cold beer is always dialed in for game time. Hustle into your local BP tonight and try our new four cheese ravioli bites, a game changing appy that's here for a limited time only. This is a Boston Pizza weekend.
Yes.
The definition of it.
For sure.
Right? Move and shake. They got how many thousand, you know, TVs are in every single Boston Pizza?
Yeah,
I'd love to know the analytics on that, actually. Like, per restaurant, what are we talking, 20 TVs? Feels like it.
Yeah, probably. There would be.
Got to have them.
Got to have them.
TVs. I wonder if we're on in Boston Pizza Bar right now somewhere. I guarantee
you. Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're absolutely, man. We're it's got to happen, right? TSN 4, TSN 2, whatever it is. So
love
shout
it.
Out to Boston Pizza. And shout out to everyone behind the scenes. Our boy Arad. Shout out to Arad, who's always
JP,
moving and shaking.
JP, great recovery from the injured reserve. You came back with a vengeance.
JP, absolutely on fire. We love seeing that. Joe from the Bridge, of course, doing what he has to do. And we love Joe from the Bridge. And everyone behind the scenes for helping out. Everyone for tuning in. Radio, TV, podcast, web. We appreciate it. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your weekends. We're back Monday at...
You're my Butabi Brothers, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.